I'd like to introduce you to Simon Pilbrow. Simon's album, which is called The Colours of Light, I have to say is one of my favourite albums in my collection. I'm not saying that, Simon, just to, sort of sell more copies of your CD or whatever. It is fantastic music. Your approach to composing the music, could you just describe that a bit?
That could be answered a number of different ways, but on a practical level, melodies come into one's head in all sorts of circumstances. So you could be sitting at the piano and something just rolls out of the fingers onto the keyboard and you write it down, or you play it over and over until you've got it memorized, and then you might then write it down after that, or sometimes I might have a little recorder nearby that I can record it so I can go back to it with more detail. Other times you're out and about and a tune comes to the head, and so you might write it down, something that you're whistling in your head.
How much of the piece do you pick up on in that mental process? You're out in the garden and you're digging away with your spade or your trowel or whatever, and this bit of music comes into your mind. Is it like what you might later call the first couple of bars or the theme for the piece?
It could be either, it could be both. It's often a motif that rings around in your head. And I suppose, like in many forms of Western music, where you have motivic related melodies, where you think of a tune like, say, Autumn Leaves, where this is a simple example of where you have a two-bar motif that moves up and down the scale,
sure.
And the chords follow it, or it follows the chords, and so there's a kind of a unification of the melody by the fact that you're hearing a similar shape changing very slightly as it moves around. So
sure.
Sometimes you'll have a tune, a little melody, a phrase of a fragment of two bars comes in your head, and you're mentally playing with it and teasing around with it, and it might fall upon some kind of chord progression inside your head, with which you then think, oh, I think I might write that one down. Other times where you'll actually hear several layers at once, so you might hear one melody and then you might hear a counter melody, or at least a call and response kind of answering of the melody. So sometimes, and you think of a tune like Four Brothers by Jimmy Dufresne, where you've got the saxophones playing the majority of it, but you've got the trumpets chipping in with little two or three note phrases.
Yes.
So sometimes you're hearing that kind of thing. So you're hearing a conversation between one main melody and some other little short little chipping in kind of thing.
Sure. So,
and sometimes you've got two melodies, one on top of each other, and sometimes, and other times entirely, you might hear a rhythm in something and think, I'm just going to turn that off because I like that little rhythm. And then the rhythm goes through your head, and then that spawns something else that's unrelated completely to the tune, whose rhythm you've heard. But that little fragment of rhythm, which may not actually appear in your tune, but it becomes a kind of a stimulus.
Yes.
And so then other ideas fly off that. And then other times you might be playing around with you discover a little vamp or something on the piano, and being a piano player, when you're playing more than one note at a time, that's a more common occurrence, and you might be find a little four bar vamp or something that you then think, here's a kind of a foundation upon which I might then hear a melody above that. So you might in fact hear the accompaniment first before you hear the melody.
Right. It's a fascinating process, isn't it?
Yeah. And there's sometimes where you hear a tune and think, now, I'll just throw that from a swing feel into a Latin feel. I reckon that might work well as a Latin. I was going through a little tune in my head yesterday. I was driving up to do a nursing home call. And it just came into my head as I arrived there. I didn't write it down, so it's lost forever, but it might pop back some other time.
Sure.
But as it came to my head, I was thinking, that's probably a swing melody. But then I thought, I think I'll just put that in Latin and see up to the rhythm in my head as I was walking along, whether that would work as a Latin tune. And I figured it probably would. And that can often change the character of the tune completely. Such as the way things are. And there are times when, of course, great players will turn a swing melody into a Latin tune, and and that's the way they play it. But there has to be a kind of definitive first edition, if you like, of a tune, and then you don't really mind what anybody does with it afterwards.
You've composed all of these tunes, and all of a sudden you find that you've got some in the Jerry Mulligan collection, which is part of the Library of Congress in the United States of America, which is quite, I mean, anybody would go ape to think that some of their music was in such a prestigious collection. And you were telling me the other day that the Jerry Mulligan collection is actually a room full of Jerry Mulligan memorabilia.
That's correct. And if you Google that, you'll see pictures of it, and you'll see the cabinet in the middle of the room, which is a locked cabinet, a glass cabinet with his gold-plated baritone saxophone, which is under lock and key, and very special players like, I think, Scott Robinson, for instance, and other ones who Jerry may have put in his will or something.
Yes.
To have access to it, or to be perhaps be the curator of who gets access to it. So that's quite special. And then if you look on the walls, of the, it looks like there are awards and things like Grammys and that sort of thing hanging up on the wall. And then at more bench level, it looks like there's a bench top with cupboards all underneath that that lines the room, the perimeter of the room, and that's where all his music and scores and things are stored. And in that, my slim little...
don't be too modest. Be too modest, Simon.
It's clear that he liked the tunes because he wrote on the outside of the folder some good tunes from Australia. And so when I was contacted by the Library of Congress in 2008, this was a complete surprise to me because I'd given this little folder to Jerry back in the beginning of 89, so almost 20 years earlier.
Let's talk about just quickly about the Jerry Mulligan collection. Who decided that there would be a Jerry Mulligan collection and not a Bob Hope collection? There may be a Bob Hope collection, but how many of these collections are in this Library of Congress?
That's a very good question because the place can't expand. I mean, it's in the heart of Washington, D.C., and so I guess the building can't expand in all directions. How the collections get there, I think, is a matter for, I suppose, the committees that run the Congress, Library of Congress, when there's any kind of death of an important... or perhaps even later in a person's life, he probably was approached by them saying, look, we'd be interested in having a collection here of your material. And so after he died, his material went there, and they then would have allocated someone to be a curator of that collection and sort it all out and pull it together. And this is the gentleman that contacted me in 2008 saying, right, we've found this, we don't know much about you, but are you still a jazz musician? And, be assured this is a permanent collection and your music is permanently in there.
You must have nearly sort of fallen off your chair when you heard that comment from somebody in America.
Well, I did. I mean, I was checking emails before leaving for work, and I ran upstairs and printed it out and showed my wife. It was only a short email of about 3 or 4 paragraphs, but it was very, very friendly and warm and encouraging, and you wanted a bit more information. And I asked him then, what were the tunes that I left? And so he said,
I can't remember.
Well, yeah, that was a long time ago, and these are things written before I was 26. I would have been 26 at that time.
The question that I now have for you, Simon, is about, I'm going to refer back to the whole album, Colours of Light, because... Colours of Sound, because there are a number of different groupings of musicians, if I can put it that way, and some of them are very lush, like we heard with Surprise, and this one sounds to be a smaller group. Was that something that you did, or was it something that Brent Fisher did with you or for you?
Brent Fisher suggested, I think Brent was in a cut-down version, creating a small clarinet choir sound, and in fact the particular tune that you just played then I had harmonized for 4 clarinets in my kind of progenitor arrangements that were then given to Brent, and so that neatly fitted into the clarinet choir concept, but he expanded that to be 5 voices, 4 clarinets and 1 bass clarinet,
which would give it a bit of extra richness to the sound.
That's right, and a little extra depth as well. Also it, when you listen to that recording, you'll hear the bass clarinet slightly playing some different rhythms at various points to make it stand out a little more in the bottom of the register, not just playing, hugging the same rhythms of the other 4 clarinets. And there are a few places where there's a bit of contrapuntal activity between combinations of them towards the end of it. And that combination was also used for A Fisher's Line. In a sense, I'd preempted that because both of those tunes were conceived in that way. And so if Brent was thinking of using some of the formats that he was familiar with using himself, particularly after he took over a lot of his father's arranging activities as his health declined in late years, then Brent was really working within the Fisher framework, if you like, of all the things, all the above things. And so we therefore were able to have 4 big band recordings, 2 with the clarinet choir, 2 with smaller groups still, 2 with the nonet, which had 6 horns and rhythm section, and then the 2 ones with string orchestral backing with a 9-piece orchestra.
Simon, I have to go. Once again, thank you so much for your time and patience.
Thank you very much for having me. It's been a pleasure.
That's okay.
Thank you.
Speak to you later on. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.